Okay, so we are holding on Kofun and Zion. Raise two lines from the top.
Oh, okay. We're going to do that again. Okay.
Yeah. He told me you got up for the first stuff now. So, yeah. Okay. So to recap then, so the sugya is about the question. If you say, if you borrow money from somebody and you write in the shtar that I'm going to pay you from diikni, anything that I buy in the future, which we do write that as a standard thing in shtar, if you have a suba, for example, the question is what happens if afterwards he bought something. So if he bought it and kept it, there's no question. Obviously, then that's everything he owns is mishpat. But if he bought it and then sold it to somebody else, or he bought it and then bequeathed it to somebody else, can the Baal Chayv collect from those mishpat? And we were saying, the Gemara was saying, that the question is really only according to the Rabbanon. Because according to the Meir, there's no question that he can. Okay, so we used our mission. We tried to use our Mishnah as a proof, the case where a house fell on a person and his father, and we said that's different because the son's heirs themselves have a mitzvah to pay off their father's debts outside of the question of whether you can be koyne with of whether diikni works. Okay.
And therefore
you can't draw any conclusion. Right. Then we said that after all, even if you can draw a conclusion from it, fine, you could still say that it's only according to a mayor, and we're asking according to the chacham. So, that's we're holding then the second.
I had a question before we move forward, and my question was not answered. The fact that you cannot carry on Shabbat is Midraisa or Midrabanan?
Midrabanan, but that's a separate thing. You're talking about the fact that the Gemara had said that you can make a Kenyan for a Shvimara on Shabbat in order to make him feel better, yeah.
Right.
No, doing Kenyan in general is only Midrabanan. Okay. The concept of not being able to do it on Shabbos, yeah. Okay. So two lines. So the second line of Kufman Zion on a base. Amar of Yaakov in a half kud Mishmei de Ravina, Toshma, come, let's bring a proof about this, the Ichni question. A Mishnah says, Shtore Choy Kamukdom in Psula, and a Shtar Choy that is predated is possible. The predated, the Rashbam gives an example, let's say the Shtar was written on Tetzvav Nissen, which would actually be the first day of Pesach, so really your Yom Nissen. There's two possibilities, really. Either the Shtar is predated before the loan actually took place, or it's predated it's written sometime after the loan, but predated to a future time before it was written. In other words, you could have, for example, so one scenario is that Shtar was written on Tesvav Nissen, and it says, which was actually the first day of Pesach, so really Yudalev Nissen, whatever, and it says on it Aleph Nissen, that's one example of predating it. The other example, the Shtar has a wrong date. The Shtar has a date 2 weeks earlier than when it was actually written.
It's wrong because of...
Because it's written...
Because when the loan was done.
So that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. There's two possibilities. There's two possibilities. No. So there's also cases of post-dating, which we're going to talk about next.
No,
right now we're talking about predating. Predating, you can have that... you can have one possibility is... For example, that the loan actually took place with Shlodish Nissen, but they didn't get around to writing the Shtar until 2 weeks later. Then, at that point, they wrote in the Shtar Aleph Nissen. So that Rashbam says is not such a big problem, because the loan did actually take place, and the Shibud began on Aleph Nissen. The scenario we're talking about over here is where the loan actually took place on Tesvav Nissen, and they wrote in the Shtar falsely Aleph Nissen. So, such shortest of Sulim. Because then you're making it that now you're gonna start the shibud earlier than it should. Anybody who bought the chasim from him between Aleph and Tesvav Nissen is going to be wrongfully taken away from.
Wait a minute. The shibud starts at the time of the loan.
That's exactly the problem. That's exactly the problem.
Because it started at the time of the shtar.
No, because what's the logic? The whole point is, the reason why the shibud takes place is because there's a koil. You don't have a koil. The shtar is written. First of all, shtar is not supposed to be written ahead of time anyway. A shtar is only supposed to be written when the loan takes place. Be that as it may, that's how it is. So a shtar koil that's muktam is possible. It's actually, Tosfos discusses over here the question. Tosfos says that Tosfos learns over here that it means possible completely. It's as if there's no shtar at all. Tosfos discusses it extensively in some other places, such as the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, the possibility that maybe some of the Rishonim say, Rashi says, for example, that actually, no, it means you can't collect with it from the Chosim and Shabbatim, but it's still valid as to collect with it from the Chosim and Echor. It still has the validity of the Shtar in the sense, like, you have a proof, you have a Shtar, so the guy can't say, I never borrowed money or whatever, but you can't use it to collect from the Shabbatim. Anyway, the Mishnah continues, V'amu Chorin Kshirim, post-dated Shtaris are kosher. Again, the two possibilities: either that you borrowed a nissen and then you wrote the shtar later, or you wrote the shtar on the day that the loan took place, but you put a later date. Whatever it is, that's kosher because then you're not wrongfully taking away from the lekuchas. Now, the safedai of the ikni kano macha, the ikni kano macha b'hodesh shalom shabed. So, if you're going to tell me again, the subject of our sugya is this question of the ikni. If you're saying in the shtar that I will pay you off, that you have a shibud, even on anything the ikni that I will buy, and then that I go and resell to somebody else, or that I go and bequeath to somebody else, if you're going to say that that's not mishubud, mu'chorin am I creating, then why should a shtar mu'ucher be kosher? So he borrowed money in Nissan and they actually wrote the shtar in Tishrei, or they only dated it Tishrei, whatever it is. What happens? So he's going to have bought mechasim during that period. It's the ikni. If we're going to say that it's not meshuvud, so what's going to happen then? He's going to meanwhile the Baal Chayiv is going to go and collect from is going to collect from Tishrei and onward. But
he's going to miss out.
The problem is the lekuchas that he's going to be coming to take. He's going to be taking from the kohos who bought from between Nissan and Tishrei, which is where the how could that that's the ikni. So how could that be? Because the shtar was written in Tishrei, and at that time these nechassim were already bought and resold. But meanwhile, the havah actually took place in Nissan. And if you're going to tell me, so Mela, if they're mishubud, okay, there's no difference whether the shtar is dated Nissan or the following Tishrei. Either way, they're under a shibud. But if they're not under a shibud, then mulcharim should be possible because then you're going to illegally be taking it away from them because by the time based on the date of the shtar in Tishrei, they were already bought. Based on the actual date alone in Nissan, they weren't bought yet. So therefore, the fact that we're saying that shtari chayiv that are mu'ucher are kosher implies that the ikni must work, that the shibud works on the ikni, which is what we're out to prove.
That's what we're trying to prove, and it means
that the chachamim would make the distinction, as the Rashbam talked about in yesterday's Gemara, that even the chachamim might agree that there's a difference between a shibud and being machna. That a shibud might be stronger than you can be machna dava shaloi b'alayim, but you can be mishabed yourself on something shaloi b'alayim. And again, the answer is Hamani the mayor. He knows because you could answer again that this mission maybe is only according to the mayor daughter on a machna dava shaloi b'alayim. Again, we're asking according to the chachamim. You don't clearly see that this mission is necessarily according to them.
So we still did not answer.
And we still don't answer. Amr of Meshaoshi and Meshmeidurab, a Toshma, come, we'll bring another proof. A Braitha tells us, we learned this back in Bava Metzia, L'shvach kakois ketzad. What does it mean when we say in Masechta Gittin that you're not allowed to take for shvach kakois? You can't take the Baal Chayiv can't collect for shvach from the chosim l'shabadim if they tikkun o'olam, because otherwise nobody's going to want to buy and be mashbiach property. Ketzad, what does this mean? How does it come about that a Baal Chayiv is going to be collecting from shvach kakois? Suppose somebody sold a field to somebody else, the hishbicha, and that somebody else improved it. And then the Baal Chayiv, so Reuven had previously at some time borrowed money from Levi. He now sold a field to Shimon sometime after the halva. And Shimon improved the field, or Bob Baal Chayiv v'tofa, and now Levi the Baal Chayiv comes and takes it away from Shimon. With the improvements, right? And then the Rama points out, you'd have to be talking about evidently that the amount of his halva is greater than the value of the is greater or equal to the value of the field plus the improvements. Otherwise, it's true. He'd be taking the field plus the improvements, but he'd be reimbursing.
As we say in English, buildings and built and
yeah. So there is actually a machlokes who's showing him what kind of improvements we're dealing with over here, and also later on the Almond when we talk about shvach. Are we talking about? Does it include, for example, shvach that came on its own? For example, the concept the Gemara has mentioned earlier in Almond Sefta we had a few times. Let's say, for example, a tree trunk became fatter, or the ground got the more sediment, or whatever. Or are we talking specifically about things that he did, like planting trees or whatnot? Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So kshul goyve. So now, when that buyer is going to be collecting from the seller, because after all, there was achrayus on the sale, and therefore he has to be reimbursed. Obviously, lokeach has to be reimbursed for the shnach, because either way, I mean, the fact is, originally the field was worth 100, now it's worth 120. The whole 120 was taken away from him. Somehow, he has to be reimbursed for that 120. The question is, what does he get reimbursed from? True goyve, when he collects from Reuven, goyve as a keren nechasim b'shabadim, the keren, the 100, he can collect even from nechasim b'shabadim. So meaning, in other words, if Reuven doesn't have 100 of bnei chorin at the moment, all he has is 100 of this property worth 100 that he at some previous time sold to Yehuda, then Shimon is going to be entitled to take that away from Yehuda. To get reimbursed for his 100. The shvach is only going to be able to, the extra 20, he's only going to be collecting from the chasim b'necharin. He can only collect it from Reuven's own property that's still in Reuven's possession at this time. That Tosfos brings up the question. I mean, if Reuven has b'necharin anyway, then how is Shimon collecting from the Shabbadim anyway? And for that matter, how is Levi collecting from the chasim b'shabbadim? How is anybody collecting from Mishabadim? The rule is you can't collect from Mishabadim if there's Bnei Chorin available.
If there's 20 of
Bnei Chorin. Right, so Tosfos gives one answer, is let's say he only has Nechasim Mishabadim. So what it means that he can collect from Nechasim Bnei Chorin is if Reuven ever gets again, if he ever buys property again, then Shimon will be able to take his 20 from that. But meanwhile, true, he won't, because he can only collect that 20 from Bnei Chorin. Sorry, he called it. Tosfos brings that as one answer. Tosfos gives another answer also, that let's say this karka was designated an apotiki, so therefore the loiva can only collect from that and nothing else, even if there's bnei chorin available. And different other
strictly
an apotiki is like a mortgage. It applies strictly apoite hekayim. It applies strictly to this particular designated nechas. Yeah.
Hey.
There's a variety of other explanations, like the Rishonim and Achronim talk about how this is possible, how he can quit collecting from the Shabbadim if there are supposed to be Bnei Chorin available. But yeah, anyway, the point is that the Isakadaidach the Ikni Kono Macha the Ikni Kono Vahoda Shloimish David. So if you're going to tell me that the Ikni does not create a Shibud on those Nechasim that were bought after the Halva and then resold or given away as an inheritance or whatever, then why is the Baal Chayv collecting the Shvach anyway? The Shvach only came into existence after the Halvah, because by definition, Reuven sold the property to Shimon, and then the Shvach was created, whether by itself, whether Shimon doing it, whatever. The Shvach didn't exist at the time of the Halvah. It's an example of the Ichni.
The Shvach existed before the sale?
The Shvach only came into existence after the sale. But the main point is, it came into existence long after the Halvah. The Halvah took the... Reuven borrowed the money from Levi in Nissan.
Right.
In Iyo, he sold a field to Shimon. In Sivan, Shimon improved that field. In Tammuz, Levi comes and takes the field to satisfy his debt. If the Ikni did not create a Kinyan on any... If you were to say that saying the Ikni in the Shtar does not create a Shibud on anything that Reuven did not own at the time of the Halvah, or rather, anything that Reuven did not own, but bought after the Halvah, after Nissan, and then resold or bequeathed to somebody else, then the Shvach didn't exist in Nissan. The Shvach only came into existence in Sivan. It's an example of the Ichni. So that's... There is, when we get to the end of the sugya, we'll talk about the halacha is that after all, the ikni does create a shibud. There is a machloikas rishonim, which in turn comes out in the Shulchan Aruch between the Mechaber and the Ramah, whether in the end, since we say that the ikni does create the shibud on these things that you bought and then sold afterwards, do you actually have to write it in the shtar or not? You have So the Mahadra says you do have to write it. If not. The Ramah says it's similar to Achrayus Tolos Sofer. Even if it's not written, it's assumed. So then according to that, the question in our Gemara would be if you specifically said that if you specifically didn't include the Ichni, then you'd have one way. But otherwise, the Ichni is always assumed. Yeah. So obviously, since we're talking about the Baal Chayv collecting the Shvach, how could that be unless he... And again, the situation is that Reuven originally borrowed 120, so therefore 120 has to be paid back, and that's why he's taking the Shvach to satisfy the other 20 of the debt. But he wouldn't be able to do that if the Ichni didn't work. But obviously, the Ichni must work. The answer is, again, Homani Rameyu, he donned on a Machna Dava Shalai Balar. Again, you could answer that that's only a coincidence of Meir, not necessarily would the Chachamim agree with that, right? Okay.
And they told Allah.
So we don't know yet. We don't know yet. That's what we're still trying to figure out. According to the Chachamim, in general, when the mayor is, in general, Yachid Rabim, Halacha Rabim, right? So in general, this Halacha is going to be like a Chachamim. In general, we say you can't be Makna Java Shalai Bala Olam. So the question is, according to the Chachamim, is there maybe a difference between Hakna and Shibu? So now that we ran out of possible proofs, now we'll get down to brass tacks. Okay, so the Gemara says,
what?
So we'll get down to the bottom line. Im Timtaloy. Okay.
American expression.
Fine.
What's
it's an expression. No. Okay.
Like what is
it means let's get down to the bit to the bottom of it. Okay.
So
Im Timtaloy Ma Mishtabid. Im Timtaloy Ma Deikni Kano Macha Deikni Kano Vahodish Loy Mishtabid. So now. Okay. So we have the two possibilities. We have that maybe Deikni does not create a Shibud, and we, according to the Chachamim, and we would say that all these various Mishnayot and Braises that we were quoting are all only according to the Meir. If we say that, fine, Holoi Mishtabed, then that's it. That ends the discussion. Then there's no Shibud, and that's that. But Im Timtaloy Mishtabed, but if you're going to say that it does create a Shibud on those Nechasim, which he bought, again, which he bought after the Halvah, he bought them in Ir, resold them in Sivan, and we're saying that the Ikni creates a Shibud on them as well, then we can ask another question. And the fact that, as usual, as the rule that the posts can have, that the Rishonim have, that when the Gemara uses one side of a question as a basis for the next question, it means the halacha is that way, that's how it ends up. The halacha is, in fact, that the Ikni does create that Shibud, therefore it means that we don't need all the answers we gave, that all these Braises and Mishnayas are all only according to the Meir, they do, in fact, work according to the Chacham.
But do we imply from that it applies to Darshan of the
Yes, so we're saying that Shibud is different than Hakna, for the reason that Rashbam, Shibud applies even to a Darshan Shalai Bala Olam, for the reasons that the Rashbam had talked about yesterday. That even you're going to say that a Shibud is stronger because you could say that you can't be machne something shalai bala olam, but to make a shibud on yourself is something stronger. And also the Rashbam said another reason is because you don't want shalai tino delos with no loiven. No, you don't want that potential lender is going to say, you know what, I'm not going to end up collecting from Deikni, therefore I don't want to bother. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so im tim saloima mishtabit. So if you're going to say that the halacha is the Ikni does create that shibud, then we can ask another question based on that. Love of a love of a cause of a connor mahu. What would happen? Let's say so he borrowed from Levi. Then he also borrowed another amount from Yehuda. Because of a connor mahu. Then he bought property which he now sold to Shimon. Mahu. The question is which one of the two lenders, Levi or Yehuda, has the shibud on that?
He borrowed
from Levi in Nissan, and he wrote in the Shtar Deikni, according to the Ramah, he didn't even write in the Shtar for the Suk. Then he borrowed an Ear from Yehuda, and he wrote the same thing, Deikni. Then in Sivan, he bought property. Then in Tammuz, he sold at the Shin.
Then
he went broke. So now, when Levi and Yehuda are coming to collect their debt, which one has the Shibud on this particular piece of property? L'kama Mishtabed or L'basra Mishtabed? Do we say that the shibud is only to the first one because the Ikni was written to him, so therefore only Levi can get it, or Labasra Mishtabed, or maybe do we say that maybe it goes to the second one, maybe Adraba, the Nechasim didn't yet exist yet at the time of the second loan either, then he only bought the Nechasim later on. So maybe what it means by writing a second Deikni, by writing a Deikni to Yehuda, it amounts to saying, I'm taking away the Shibud from Levi and giving it to you. Does that work? Well, that's what we're asking. And then there's yet another possibility, which we're going to see, that maybe Levi and Yehuda divide it, which that's another possibility. So yeah. Amr of Nachman, so Rav Nachman says, Hom milti boilon, we taka had this question in Babel. The Shochol mitam, so they sent a message from Eretz Yisrael, that the din is, Rishon Kono. The first one, Levi, is the one that has the shibud.
The first one.
So we say, in other words, that because his shtar came first, so therefore that's it. There's no going back from that. His shtar is dated earlier. His shtar is dated Nissan. Yehuda's is only dated here. Therefore, Levi is going to have the shibud on that property. On the other hand, Rav Huna says, no, they divide it. They divide it. So the Rashbam says the reason is it's not dividing as it's like a suffix, because he says the fact is the two Shibudim effectively came into existence at the same time. Because again, this property didn't exist. It didn't belong to him in Nisan or in Iyar. He only bought it in Sivan and sold it in Tammuz. So therefore, when does the Shibud on it take effect? Only when it's bought in Sivan or in Tammuz, when it's sold, however you look at it, whatever. And at that point, both Levi and Yehuda are equal creditors of his. So therefore, Yachloiku. And the Rashbam also says what it means is when we say Yachloiku, it doesn't mean 50-50. It means in proportion to the amount each of them lent him. So if Levi lent him 200 and Yehuda lent him 100, it means that Levi will wind up with 2/3 of this thing and Yehuda will wind up with 1/3. The Rambam has a whole different shit on it.
So for a period of time, it was unencumbered, basically. I mean, there was no...
Until he sold it. No, not Christ. I mean, until when he bought it in Sivan, at that point, it's because they heard. Of course they have equal rights there, no question about it. The question is, once he sold it in Tamuz, and now it becomes the Chosim Meshavadim, then which one of them gets it? Anyway, the Rambam has a different understanding of it. He seems to say that the reason why Yachloku is because you have a suffix, because he says, therefore, in fact, if one of them winds up going, and if either Levi and Yehuda winds up, or Levi or Yehuda winds up in his tofus, this property, then he has to keep it. As opposed to according to the Rashbam, no, it's not a question of suffix. It's just their Shibudim both came at the same time. So what the Rambam says is actually what you do is like this. You see if when they divide it 50-50, if the one who lent him the smaller amount gets at least his whole amount, right, then you do that and then the rest goes to the other one. So let's say, for example, in our scenario, Levi lent him 200, Yehuda lent him 100. So if the property is worth, if the property is worth at least 200, right, then fine, you give 100 to Levi, mm-hmm, and you give 100 to Yehuda, and he's out of the picture because he only lent 100 in the first place. You give the other 100 to Levi, and that's it. So then Levi still owed another 100.
The rest goes to save
by the person who bought it. No question about that. But the problem, the question would be, what if, for example, the property is only worth 150? Then what you do? He borrowed 200 from one, he borrowed 100 from the other, and now if you divide it 50-50, it's only 75 to one and 75 to the other. That's not enough to pay off either one. Then, if I remember correctly, the Rambam says you split it 50-50. I think, yeah. So each one of them, I think so. Is it proportionally? I don't remember, actually. Maybe it is proportionally.
Because you split it 50-50 anyway.
If at least one of them is going to get paid off in full.
Yeah, right.
But if neither one of them is going to get paid off in full, then I think...
The same date.
It doesn't matter whether Levi and Yehuda are the same date or different dates. Either way, I mean...
It's not a different date.
No, that's when we say over here Yachloku means. Oh, according to that, it's only if they're the same day. Possible.
Oh, wow.
I think that's a different case. But I don't know. Could be. I don't know. All right. Anyway. Okay. V'chein Toni Rava Bar Avuah Yachloku, and so also Rava Bar Avuah also said like Rav Huna that they should divide it. So what is so? Yeah. Omer Ravina. So Ravina tells us an interesting historical thing. Madura Kama Rav Ashi Omalan Rishon Kana, in the first go through of Rav Ashi, the first revision of Rav Ashi, he said Rishon Kana, the first one, Levi is Koine, the property. We'll see in a second. Madura Bastra de Rav Ashi, in Rav Ashi's second go through Omalan Yachloku, he changed his mind and said that actually they divide it. What do we mean his first go through and a second go through? So the Rashbam quotes, from a tshuva of Rav Hai, of Rav Hai Goin, that Rav Ashi was the Rosh Hashiva for almost 60 years. Every year they would have the two famous Yarchei Kala.
60?
Almost 60 years, yeah.
60?
Yeah. Wow. According to the Gezer of Shur Goin, it was 56 years. So every year they had the famous two Yarchei Kala, Nisan and Tishrei. So each one they would learn publicly in the yeshiva. They'd learn one of the masechtas of Shas, and thus in 30 years you would go through all 60 masechtas in Shas. So therefore, Rav Ashi, having been Rosh Hashiva for almost 60 years, he went through all of Shas twice. So Madura Kama is his first go through when he got to Bava Basra the first time around, and Madura Basra is the second time around. Some people also say actually that we're not just talking about Rav Ashi learning through Shas. We're actually talking about him composing, putting together the Gemara as we have it, that he put it together in two revisions. There's an interesting side thing. There's a famous manuscript. There's a famous manuscript of Schaff called the Munich manuscript, because that's where it's kept in the library in Munich. It dates from the late 1200s. It's the only known complete manuscript of all of Schaff.
It's never destroyed.
No. So most of it is still intact, but yeah. So it's the only known complete manuscript of all of Shas. But there's any number of places in it where the Girsa in it is different than the Gemaras that we have. So you have the Sfarim Dukduke Soifrim, for example, and other Sfarim that go through systematically and then point out all the difference in the Girsas. Interesting thing that it's a known thing in general. The Chazan Ish was one person who was very. He wasn't very fond of this idea of using Kisvei Yad to arrive at the correct Girsa. In this, in other regards, as far as the Girsa and the Rambam, for example. So he once said that this Munich manuscript, maybe all it is maybe it's Rav Ashi's Madura Kama. Maybe it's only his first version of Shas. Not necessarily when there's a difference between it and our printed Gemaras and the versions that the Rishonim had or whatever. Not necessarily should we say that we should follow it lahalacha just because it's a venerated old manuscript. Interesting thing. I'll tell you also one other quick thing about this Madura Kama and Madura Basra, and then let's go on. I think I've mentioned this before. We know when those of us who were here went through Nedarim and Nazir, those were much different in style than most of the rest of Shas. Mm-hmm. Also, there's a couple of other Masechtas that are like that. Talmud is another one. So the Tiferes Yisrael is an interesting thing on it. He says, you know, we say in Pirkei Avos, I'll tell you she'efnesh. And I don't say when I have time, I'll learn. Shem alo tipone, because you never know, you may not have the free time in the end. He says, maybe that's what happened with Rav Ashi. We see over here in our Gemara that he went through most of Shas twice. Maybe those Masechtas are the ones he never had time to revise, and therefore the style of them ended up being different, ended up being his first style rather than the Tiferet Yisrael says this on Pirkei Avos. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so that's the Rav Ashi.
When do we get our version?
Our version is Madura Basra. It is Madura Basra. It is the second one.
But then according to that other thing that they said, that it's just the second time the Yeshiva learned it. So there is no Madura Basra.
So according to that, right, there's no different revisions of the Gemara. There's just the learning form, right? Okay. The Hilchsa Yachloku, and the bottom line is indeed that they divide it according to the Rashbam proportionately, and according to the Rambam, you see if one of them can be paid off completely, and if not, then you go from there. Okay. The Gemara says Maestri. Okay, I have a contradiction, though, to that. The same braisa that we quoted before, the Shvach Kakois case. And what do we mean that Shvach Kakois cannot be collected from the Chosim Shabbatim? Harish Macha Soda L'Chaveri, a person sells a field to somebody else. So again, Reuven sold the field to Shimon, Vishvicha, and Shimon improved it. Or Bob Al-Choy V'Torfa. And then we said Levi comes and takes away the field from Shimon to satisfy his debt. Plugova. Now when Shimon is going to get reimbursed for that field from Reuven, he comes and collects the Govet, the Kerem, the Chosim Mishibadim. He comes and collects the Kerem, the original value of the field, even from the Chosim Mishibadim, even from property that Reuven previously sold. There's a Shvach from the Chosim Mishibadim. The Shvach, the extra 20, he can only collect, we said, from the Chosim Mishibadim. Now, Vim Issa, if you're telling me that we just said Yachloiku, that if you have two lenders, then they divide the Ikni property, this property that was bought afterwards, that they divide it. In that case, what you have over here is effectively something like that. You have Levi the Malva and Shimon the Lekeach are both effectively they have an equal shibud on the shvach of this property. So why are you telling me that why are you telling me that Shimon is entitled to reimbursement of the entire shvach? He should be entitled to only half of it.
Yeah, Yachloku.
The answer is you're right. My goyvanami, if it's only chatzi shvach, you're right. When we say that he collects, we don't mean he collects the full 20. We mean he collects only 10. He collects only half of the shvach. According to the Rambam proportionally.
Why is the bachur entitled to the shvach at all? Why don't we just say we'll sell the field? And the Shvach will give back.
Because we're talking about, that's why the Ramah says, we're talking about over here, that the Chayv was equivalent to the, or more than the value of the field plus the Shvach. So the field is 100, the Shvach is 20.
The Shvach is talking about the Shvach that he was much bigger, the character.
Yes.
So it's nothing to do with the...
But that's what we're saying, the Ikni. That's what we're saying. It's still part of the Ikni.
But the Ikni is the field that he bought. So if I buy a field for $100, and then I build something worth another $100, So the only thing he's entitled to was the first $100. The second $100 is mine.
Right, but it's still all part of the same. It's still all part of the same field, and therefore.
So I understand that we have to do something. We should just sell it. Give the value $100 back to him because it's totally his. It's like sometimes if I buy a wallet and I put money inside the wallet, you take back the wallet, but don't take back the money in the wallet.
Okay, but that's kind of shvach of kakoyes is not really. I mean, in Bava Metzia, the Gemara talks about what kind of shvach are we talking about? Is it shvach that's separable from the karka, like keres? Is it something that's not separable, like for example, it's fertilized or whatever?
Even if it's not separable, just sell it and give him back his value. How does it go back to the
well, it still amounts to the same thing. It still amounts to the same thing anyway. Either way, it's being taken away from Shimon. So either way, it's taken away, being taken away from Shimon, and Shimon needs to be reimbursed for what he put into it, or for the shvach, or even if not necessarily. Again, it could be shvach and mela, according to some of the Rishonim.
Okay, okay,
yeah, but even if it's shvach that he put in. So okay. Anyway, so now is that the final halacha? I mean, we have other gemaras that just say that he collects shvach. So does it mean that we have to modify that on the basis of our Gemara and say Chatzi Shvach? Some of the Rishonim say yes. The Rashbam over here says that. Some of the other Rishonim say that. Some of the other Rishonim, again, the Machlokes is brought in Shulchan Aruch, say not necessarily. When you have a situation over there with two Baalei Chovos, then yes, you get then yes, only Chatzi Shvach. In a case like this with a Lakeach and a Baal Chov, maybe that's different. You get maybe the Lakeach is entitled to full Shvach over there. Or I think they make a distinction between, I think in Shulchan Aruch maybe it makes a distinction whether it's Shvach Mamela or whether it's Shvach that he put in, but I don't remember that detail. Okay. All right, going back now to these various cases, the previous Mishnah had the first case of a house collapsed on two people. You don't know which one died first, and now you have to figure out what's happening with the inheritance. So another case. Nofel abayis olav al ishtoi. A house collapsed on a husband and a wife, and the Rashbam makes a point of saying, we have to be talking about they don't have any children together. Because therefore the question is now she may have children from another husband, she has brothers or father or whatever. So the question is what happens to her nechassim? Yosha baal oimim isha meisa rishon. So rishon really. So the heirs of the husband want to argue that the wife died first, v'achakach mesa baal, and then afterwards the husband died. So therefore, in other words. Well, it doesn't have to be they're newly married. I mean, they could be married for 20 years and also not have kids, but whatever, yeah. The point still remains that yeah, they're arguing that she died first, then her husband inherited her, and then the husband died, therefore we inherit from him. Yoshi Isha, I mean, Baal Mesush and Bachach Mesa Isha. And the Yoshim of the wife say the other way around. The husband died first. She doesn't yarish from him, granted, but it means that her and Nechasim are still up for grabs. That's the point. Same way as in the previous mission. It's Shema Vashema. Sure, there's no. Neither one has a body claim over here, but that's the end.
Yeah.
Okay. So they argue Baal Mesushin Vachakach Mesish. First the husband died, then the wife, so therefore he didn't yashin her. We're entitled to yashin her. What happened? So like in the previous mission of Bishama Imim Yachloku, the Bishama says that you divide it because it's a case of Mamun Amutu Besafik. Bitzul says it depends what kind of Nechasim. Now, remember that you have three different kinds of nechasim that we can be talking about. There's the ksuba that she's entitled to if her husband died first, 100 or 200, as the case may be, plus. So it's the ksuba if there is, or whatever. Yeah, what? Ksuba is all, yeah. Ksuba is an indichrin is another matter. That's if she died first, but yeah. So you have the ksuba, you have nichsit son barzol, and you have nichsit malur.
Right.
So these are, what's the disposition of each of them? But so loimim, nechasim b'chaskasim, the nechasim remain in their chazakah. Now, the mission is not spelling out which nechasim it means, but the Rashbam explains it means the nechasim tzayin barzah. Some of the Rishonim want to learn that actually this nechasim b'chaskasan is sort of like a headline, and then the Gemara is going to, and then the mission is going to continue about the two kinds, ksuba versus nechasim lor. But most of the Rishonim say, and the Rashbam specifically says that no, it means we're not talking a headline and then two subheadings. We're talking three headings, the three types of nechasim. So nechasim b'chaskasan, the nechasim remain in their chazaka. Who is considered the muchzak on those? We'll deal with in the Gemara. Who is considered the muchzak on the nechasim tzayin b'azor? We'll deal with that in the Gemara. Ksuba b'cheskas yoshe abal. The ksuba remains in the chazaka of the yoshim of the husband, because we say like this. We discussed in connection with the previous Mishnah the idea the Rashbam discussed the idea over there about shtar ha'omid ligvos. If you have a shtar that is eventually going to be collected, such as a ksuba, is it considered to go, Domi? Is it considered even now as if it was already collected?
So we
have some sugyas about that, right? So the Shammai holds that yes. So actually the Rashbam just briefly says over here that even Beit Shammai agrees that even Beit Shammai, when they say Yachloiku, they're not talking about the Ksuba, they're talking about the other Misotin. He says that on the basis of a Gemara and Yevamos. And then the basis for that would be, why would they say that? Because Shtar Ha'emid Ligbos Kigavu Domi. It's considered as if it's already collected, and therefore she's entitled to that. Tosfos has a long discussion and says that it's not really comparable to the case in Yevamos over there. The case in Yevamos was talking about where she died as a Shemeres Yavam. Here we're talking about where she's already married. It's a whole different scenario, and therefore Tosfos says that Beit Shammai would actually, when they say that Yachloku, it does mean the Ksuba and everything. It means all three types of Mechatim. Anyway, the Hillel, who's saying that Ksuba Becheskes Yoshe Abal, they hold, and this is the halacha, Shtar Ha'emet Ligbos Lav Kegavri Domri, that just because something is written in a shtar, it's not considered as if it's already collected. So therefore, the husband is still muchzik in this money. You don't say that she's muchzik in it, and therefore her Yoshim should get it. You say the husband is still muchzik. Therefore, eventually, when she's paid off to her, then it'll be hers, of course. But the whole point is, he and she died around the same time. We don't know whether the ksuba is collectible. We don't know whether the ksuba is collectible or not. If she died first, the ksuba is not collectible. Well, ksuba's been in nichrin. Fine, that's another issue. Ksuba's been in nichrin anyway. Only applies to if he and she had children together. And the Rashbam made a point of saying in the Mishnah that they didn't, because if they did, then just their joint children would be yaushing in the property anyway. There's nothing to talk about. And the nechasim that come into the marriage and go out of the marriage with her, namely nichsim luv, becheskes yosheav. Those are in the chazaka of the yoshim of the father, because the pashtus, where did she get them from? She brought them into the marriage. She inherited them, or she was given them by her father. So therefore, her father's family is considered the ones who are most sick in it.
Regardless of when she
does. Regardless of, well, that's Basila saying, yeah, since even though it's true, we don't know, we have to go according to whoever's muhsik. And we don't say yachloku, we say that whoever's muhsik in the respective property is the one who's going to keep it.
But who is muhsik is the allowing of the goring ox,
yes?
And the baby was there.
Yeah, well, there you had Sunkos saying yachloku, but that was a different matter. There you had Bori Hashem, at least according to one opinion in the Gemara over here. He was Shema Hashem. Yeah, you have the opinion that it was Shema Hashem over there also. Okay. Tosfos gets into a number of long discussions of it here. You can see, but one of them actually is the question. Usually, when she wants to collect her ksuba, she has to be able to swear that it hasn't been collected yet, that she was moichel it or whatever. And you have a rule in Shas called Ein Adam Moir Shvua Labonos. You can't bequeath the ability to swear on something to your children. So how are we saying over here that the ksuba is the cheskes Yoshe Abba?
That's a question on any kind of
thing. Well, you don't have that many places where you say the ksuba is becheskes yoshabal. You have here and you have in your office. Yeah. Anyway, Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion about it. One thing, you could have the scenario over here where the husband had said at some point previously that you won't have to take that shavua. Tosfos goes further and discusses that maybe that's back of the difference whether you would say that there's an chazaka of her yoshim or of his yoshim that may make a difference, since she has a chazaka on it already. If you consider that she has a certain chazaka on it, maybe you don't have the issue of being murder shvul abanov.
So how do you proceed in practice?
So in practice, you go in like the silva against the shama, as it usually is. So therefore, so we're saying the you have three different types of things. Again, the nichsei tzein bows are going to be b'chaskasa, and they're going to belong to whoever has the chazaka on them. And we'll see in the Gemara a couple of different opinions who's considered to be muhsik in those. The ksuba, the husband, and the husband's yoshim keep, and the nichsei malug, her family gets to keep.
But the husband
gets to keep. The husband gets to keep. The husband's father, or son, whatever. Yeah.
before her husband's?
Well, because we assume she passed away before him, but her Yoshin don't have any proof that he passed away before her. If they had a proof, they'd be able to collect it. The Tosfos does discuss the question about the various levels of Yerusha. One thing Tosfos says is that possibly our Mishnah holds that the husband only inherits Dirabanan, and therefore her Yoshin have a stronger Chazakah than he does. Or that even if you say Yerusha of a husband is Daraisa, still you could argue that there's a difference between Yerusha by blood and Yerusha by marriage.
But in the previous discussion, we say it's the
That was according to Bishama. According to Bishilo, which is the halacha, you would only say Yachloku when, first of all, neither side has a body claim, and second of all, neither one is Muslim. We had back at the beginning of Bava Metzia, for example, Shmaim from the palace. You had cases we had earlier in our Masechta involving cases where actually Yachloku, because neither one is Muslim in it at the time. Here, Bishilo is saying each one of the three types of Nechazim, somebody has a chazaka.
Where did you know that?
Because that's how it is. The Ksuba, for example, the husband has a chazaka on, because unless the wife's Yorshin can prove that he died first, which they can't, which is impossible, then the husband is muhsik in that property, in that money, because it only goes to her if he dies first. So up until that point, that money belongs to him, the money of the Ksuba. Vice versa, the Nichsim Belug, the husband only is only entitled to pay us of them. The group of them belongs to her. Therefore, her Yoshim are the ones who are Muslim in it. And Nichsa and Barzal, since again, Nichsa and Barzal, the husband has full ownership of, he just reimbursed her for it at the end, then he's considered to be the Muslim in it.
So actually, what we're doing is dividing the chazakas.
Well, we're saying each thing, each type of nechassim has its own chazaka. Yeah, that's how it is. Okay, so the Gemara asks, the chazkas me. When we say nechasim b'chazkatim, when we say the nechsetzah and barzel, go to the one who has a chazaka. Rabbi Yochanan amar b'chazkas Yoshe Abal. So Rabbi Yochanan says that it means that the Yoshim of the husband have a chazaka on them, because after all, he's the one who has full sort of ownership and responsibility of them, namely, unlike Nichsim Belug, where the rule is that the goof of it never belonged to him in the first place, and if they go down in value, he's not responsible for that. That's her problem. On the Nichsim Belug. On the other hand, the Nichsim Tzen Barzal, it's true she brought them into the marriage. On the other hand, he's the one who's responsible for any depreciation in them. He has to make sure, eventually, if he dies first or they get divorced, he has to reimburse her for the original value of them.
And
in that sense, he can be considered the one who's Muslim in them. And now his heirs are therefore the ones. That's where Rabbi Yochanan is on.
He has to be the one who compensates them.
But the fact that the gain or loss in value is on him shows that he is the one who's Muslim in it, and therefore he's the one who, otherwise we would say if he didn't have a chazak on it, if they weren't considered to be owned by him, then okay, they depreciated, not my problem. The fact that we say that if they depreciated, he has to reimburse her, but as long as they're married, he's still entitled to the goof of them, means that up until that point, he has a chazak on them.
Until
he actually has to reimburse her, which we don't know whether he has to reimburse her, because we don't know which one died first. Yeah. Rabbi Loza says it means the chazakah belongs to the Yoshim of the wife, because she's the one who brought them into the marriage. And Rish Lakish says in the name of Bar Kapara, they have to divide it. Because again, each one has a certain argument for a chazaka for it. So therefore, again, you have two different chazakas. So therefore, in other words, according to him, when he says nechas and nechaskasan, it means that it's in the chazaka of both the heirs of the husband and the heirs of the wife, and therefore yachlok. V'chein toni b'kapara, and indeed b'kapara tora b'raisa like that. Hoyu v'halalu boin lirash, v'halalu boin lirash. Since after all, both groups are coming to inherit in an equal sense. They're both coming from the point of view of Yerusha. Therefore yachloiku. Therefore they divide it. And that's taka b'halalu. That is the halacha, because you usually have when you have Rabbi Yochanan against Rish Lakish, When you have the rule is usually the halacha is like a rav over a talmid. Rabbi Yochanan is the rebbe of you have a four way. Three way. So therefore, so you have Rabbi Yochanan is the rebbe of Rabbi Lazar. He's at least at the beginning the rebbe of the Shlokish, and halacha is usually like Rabbi Yochanan over the Shlokish, except the three cases
of
Rabbi Lazar. Yeah, he's also, I mean, originally he was the rebbe of the Shlokish, but besides that, also we learned earlier in the Masechta that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan over the Shlokish in all except for three cases, and this isn't one of them. On the other hand, Bakapara, the Shlokish is saying in the name of Bakapara. Bakapara is Rabbi Yochanan's rebbe, therefore the halacha is like him.
Is
Rabbi is one of Rabbi Yechanan's Rebbeim. The Shlokish is a Talmud of his, fine. But he and Rabbi Yechanan are both Talmudim of Bakapara. So therefore, the halacha is like that. Yechlin.
Like
Bakapara. Okay. Tosfos, by the way, talks on Omar Aleph about the question. According to Rabbi Yechanan and according to Rabbi Lazar, why is the Mishnah dividing them into three groups? Why are we saying this one is the Cheskoson, this one goes to the Baal, this one goes to the Isha? According to either one of them, it comes out. Two of them go to one, and when one goes to the other. The Mishnah should have just said, for example, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Mishnah should have just said, Nechasim, meaning Nechsitzon Barzel, and the Ksuba are the Cheskos Yosha Baal, and Nechasim Ayotanim are the Cheskos Yosha Baal, according to Rabbi Lazar, the other way around. Tosfos says the reason why they would say the mission didn't do that is because you have different reasons in each case why one goes the chazaka on the nichtet same barzel is a different kind of chazaka than the chazaka on the tzula. So therefore, even though it's true, they do end up going to the same place, but the reasons are different, and therefore the Mishnah kept them separate. Mishnah continues. Nafal abayis olav al imo. If the house now fell on a person and his mother, now. The Rashbam makes a point of saying that the scenario over here has to be that she didn't that she doesn't have any other children that she only has that she doesn't have any other children so her only is Rachel. He gives the example. So Rachel her husband Yaakov died previously. Now the house collapses on Rachel and Yosef. She has no other children who could possibly inherit from either of them. Yaakov, on the other hand, may have children. Yaakov has children from other wives. He has Reuben from Leah, let's say, for example. The reason why the Rashbam says that is because he says that if you had that Rachel had other children with Yaakov, for example, let's say she had Binyamin, so Yosef died in this house collapse, but Binyamin is still alive, then there would be no question. Since Binyamin definitely has a claim on part of the Nechasim, because either way, regardless whether Rachel died first or Yosef died first, either way, he stands to inherit from them.
Yes.
Therefore he would end up getting all of it. Therefore, you would say once he has a definite claim to some of it, then we would extend that and say he has a definite claim on all of it. And you would say Yosef's children, who are his potential heirs, are out of the picture. So the only case, the Rashbani, and the Rashbam mentions over here, that the Chachamim of Loiser, which is Lorraine, on the border between France and Germany, asked him about this, and he wrote them a tshuva about this. The Rashbam says, the Chachamim of Loiser, which is, in English, it's called Lorraine. In English, it's called Lorraine. It's the area you're from. It's the area sort of on the border between France and Germany. It was a big area of Chachamim in those days. So the Rashbam says the Chachamim of that place asked him about this, what would happen if there was a Binyamin over here, a brother of Yosef who wasn't involved in the house collapse. And then the Rashbam says that he wrote them a long tshuva saying that yes, in fact, in that case, then neither Reuven nor Yosef's sons nor anybody are going to inherit anything over here. Binyamin is going to get it all.
Where was the Rashbam?
The Rashbam himself lives in France.
Where?
In Ramuru, I think was the name. Rumrug, I think was the name of the town or something, yeah.
Maybe,
yeah. Anyway.
And then he wrote to
the... Chacham of Loiser, yeah. Anyway, the point is, the Rashbam says, that also the case of our Mishnah would only be if there was only a Yosef, no Binyamin, no Reuven, so no full brother from Rachel and Yaakov, no half-brother from Yaakov and a different wife. There could be a Reuven. Sorry, there can't be a Binyamin. If there was a Binyamin who definitely inherits from Rachel or from Yosef, then there'd be no question about it. Tosfos discusses that. Tosfos further discusses that and says, no, we disagree. with the Rashbam and his Truva and everything. We say that regardless, when we say over here that Yachloku, it would be regardless whether there is a Binyamin or not. The fact that Binyamin has a claim to part of the Nechasim doesn't mean that he has a claim to all of it. Reuven still has his valid claim that if Yosef Yashin the property from Rachel, then it goes to Reuven.
As opposed to what
the Rashbam is saying, that if there was a Binyamin, then there's nothing to talk about. Anyway, Eilu ve'Eilu Moedim Shiachlotu. So both the Shama and the Silo agree in this case that they divide it. Because again, both Rachel's heirs, and the brothers, let's say, and Yosef's heirs, such as Reuven, both have an equal claim of Yerusha. Therefore, Yachlotu. You don't have, in other words, neither one is more Muchsak than the other, unlike in the previous Mishnah. However, Rabbi Akiva now comes and says, I agree in this case that Nechasim v'chazkasim. Now, what do you mean I agree? Who is he agreeing to? So the Rashbam says, because we said that Eilu v'Eilim Moedim, because we use the expression that the Shaman is still Moedim, therefore Rabbi Akiva also uses the word that he's Moedim, even though he's not really admitting it. Meaning, in other words, he disagrees with the Shaman and the Silo in this case. Yeah. In this case.
Moedim.
We're just saying Moedim, not in other words, he's not really being Moedim to anybody, on the contrary, he's arguing, but because the Shammah and the Silo use the word Moedim, therefore he also says Moedim. Tosfos brings up a couple of other possibilities. Tosfos brings from a Rashi elsewhere that maybe Rabbi Akiva usually holds according to his Shammai, therefore he's saying I'm Moedim to what the Silo said in other cases in the previous Mishnayos Nechasim v'Chazkasim. Tosfos says that's not. Rabbi Akiva is actually it goes according to the Silo. So what he means is Tosfos says that what he means is that even though I do hold, like this Hillel, that when it came in the previous mission of the Ksuba, was the Chazkas Yerushan Baal, but over here I hold that the Chazaka goes elsewhere. Omale Ben Azai, so Ben Azai says to Rabbi Akiva, look at this, Al Chalukin on Mitzdar, and we have enough trouble with the cases, the previous Mishnayos, where the Shammah and the Sula are arguing, it's a problem if they have this machlokas. Elosh Abbas, the lachlok, alenu with the shoven, and now you come in to make a machlokas, even in the one where finally we have the Shammah and the Silo agree on something, and you come and bring up a disagreement. So again, the question is b'chezkas mi. Again, you have the same question when Rabbi Akiva says nechasim b'chazkasim. And by the way, this is one of the rare cases where the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva against everybody else. Usually it's not, but. So b'chazkas mi, when Rabbi Akiva says the chazaka that the nechasim are b'chazkasim, who is the muchzak, the yoshim of Rachel or the yoshim of Yosef? Rabbi Ila amar b'chazkas yoshe ha'im. Rabbi Ila says it means the chazaka belongs to the yoshe ha'im, so Rachel's brothers or uncles or what have you. Rabbi Zera amar b'chazkas yoshe ha'ben. Rabbi Zera says the chazaka goes to the yoshim of the son of Yosef, meaning in other words in this case Reuven, and half brother. He solik Rav Zera. Then though, when Rav Zera moved from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, come b'shik said Rav Ila. Then he accepted Rav Ila's opinion that the chazaka belongs to the Yosheh, and therefore that Rachel's heirs are going to inherit it. Come Rabba b'shik said Rav Zera. Then on the other hand, Rabba who stayed behind in Babel. He took up Rav Zera's opinion. So Rav Zera himself, who previously held the other way, came to hold like his Bar Kotza, like Rav Ila. Amar Rav Zera. Rabba took up Rav Zera's opinion. Rav Zera himself changed his opinion, that original opinion, and followed Rav Ila. And Amar Rav Zera said on this famous expression, Shmamina Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machtin. We see from this that the heir of Eretz Yisrael makes you smart. Now that I came to Eretz Yisrael, I became smarter and I realized what the basis of Rav Ila's opinion is. And that's why I follow it.
What's the basis?
The time am I? What's the reason? Amar Abaya, because the nachla, because this inheritance has a chazaka as belonging to that shevet of the mother. In other words, meaning these nechasim, we knew all along they belonged to Rachel, and therefore we should assume that they continue to be that she and her family therefore have more of a chazaka on them than the son, who may well belong to a different shevet. We don't necessarily mean shevet. We don't necessarily mean specifically shevet. I mean, you could conceivably have where the mother and the son do belong to the same shevet if she married within her shevet. But we mean in general the family, that the nechasim have been known to belong to her. So therefore,
the previous thing was saying what?
So Reb Zera was arguing b'chazkas Yerusha Ben, that the son has more of a chazaka because the once her husband died, once Yaakov died, Yosef is the next one to inherit her. Usually, usually she'll die before Yosef. So that was why Reb Zera held that originally. But now, when it came to Eretz Yisrael, he became smarter, and now he understood that Reb Ila is saying, on the other hand, the fact that her family had an original chazaka on it, the fact that she was muchzik in this property all this time, because that's what we're dealing with, this property that she owned all this time, being an almana, did it go to Yosef? Did she die first and then Yosef yarshin it and then from Yosef it goes to his brother? Or did Yosef die first and it never didn't go to anybody else and now she dies and goes to her brothers or her father or uncle or whatever? On the basis of we should say on that basis that yes, that's who it goes to the original Shevet, the original family from whom it came, namely her family. What? Yeah, well, the point is, even if they are actually from the same Shevet, but we mean more Shevet in the sense of family.
The side,
the side, in other words, yeah. Her side rather than yeah.
But I'm not clear on why he changed his mind like that.
He changed his mind because when he came to Eretz Yisrael, when he lived in Babel, he didn't understand Rabbi Ila's Svara. He figured that the normal thing is a son is expected to inherit from his mother, not the other way around. Therefore, we should assume that there's more of a chazaka on the son's side, on Yosef's side. When he came to Eretz Yisrael, then he realized that not so. He understood the basis of Rabbi Ila's Svara, and therefore realized that's a reasonable Svara. That chazaka overrides the chazaka that usually a son outlives his mother. Yeah.